This is the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders. Here's your host, JT the Brick.
Welcome back to the official Raiders podcast. I'm your host, JT. As the Silver and Black come off their bye week and get ready to take on the Houston Texans in Mexico City on Monday Night Football. Hope you and the Raider Nation enjoyed the bye week. A lot of Raider fans that I've talked to on the radio and social media took a deep breath. Got a little bit of a break here, and all seem to be thrilled, obviously, for the 7-2 start and the way the Raiders have looked through the halfway point of the season. Now it gets interesting as the Raiders get to the meat of this schedule and a really tough test here going up against the first-place team in the AFC South in the Texans, a team that matches up well against the Raiders and are fighting for their postseason just like the Raiders. So a lot on the line. In a foreign country, as both teams go to Mexico City to play in the first Monday Night Football game ever played outside the United States. As you know, it's a home game for the Silver and Black. And I think a great honor for the Raiders to play this game at Azteca Stadium and to represent the NFL as the home team. And the last time the Raiders played, it was on national television against the Denver Broncos when they beat them on Sunday Night Football in an absolutely dominant performance. And we'll start right there. The win against Denver was incredible for the Raiders because in that game, they had the ball for over 41 minutes and rushed for over 200 yards. They dominated the Denver Broncos. And that set the tone for what we've seen since the Raiders have been on the bye week. Nationally, everybody's talking about the Raiders as a dominant team up front with an offensive and defensive line that won that game in the trenches. And now the Raiders are a more balanced team than they were when we started off the podcast in the beginning of the season, wondering what the identity of this team is. I still don't know exactly what the identity is, but after that win against Denver, you could tell they're smash mouth. And they ran the ball, and I hope they stay with that philosophy and let Derek Carr attack downfield. This team is humming. Not the perfect time for a bye week because of all the momentum, but from talking to the quarterback on the radio and talking to people around the organization and within the organization, everybody needed a break. You get a late bye week like the Raiders got, it comes at the perfect time. Some of the rookies hitting the rookie wall, not here. The Raiders are in shape. Their conditioning has been fantastic. And if you look at their core players, Carr, Mack, Cooper, Crabtree, they're relatively healthy. And the Raiders are going to get back players here in the next couple of weeks that are going to make them even better. But we're on to the Texans, and this is a really interesting matchup. Looking at the stats, the Texans are 30th in total offense, but they run it well. They're fifth overall in the NFL, rushing the football at 121 yards a game. But when it comes to their passing offense, led by Brock Osweiler, that's been their weakness. They're dead last in the league, throwing for only 187 yards a game. And Osweiler threw for 99 yards last week in the win against Jacksonville. So they haven't been able to attack deep downfield. They are a running team, and they can run it hard. They got a running back who is physical in Lamar Miller, who ranks 7th in the NFL with 720 yards on 168 carries. That's 4.3 yards per average there. So that's someone that the Raiders are going to have to wrap up and game plan. But as we look at the Raiders' offense, 5th overall, 4th in rushing, 6th in pass offense. They're doing it all. And 5th overall in points per game at 27.2. So the Raider offense has been the strength of this team all year long, and it's got to be the strength going into this game. They have an advantage over the Houston Texans. On the defensive side, the Raiders have improved over the last month. 28th in total defense, but their rush defense is 21st at 114 yards a game. The Texans defense has been really good this year. 4th overall and 3rd in pass defense at 196 yards a game. One quick point on that. You remember last game, Denver came in with the number one pass defense, and they kept Carr out of the end zone, and they kept him to the average of 184 yards a game. Well, the Texans will look to do the same thing. They're a good pass defense that'll look to get after Derek Carr, put pressure on him, and let those cornerbacks do a really good job in lockdown situations. I think the Raiders are going to have to work hard to move the ball in the air, and they can run the ball on this team. The advantage to the Raiders is their running game. So a big spot. Here we go. For the Raiders, and Derek Carr told me, they don't even play on Sunday. They play on Monday. So it's going to feel like they've been off for a while. But when they come off this Monday night game, they got to get ready for Carolina on a short week, and Carolina is going to be coming off Thursday night football with 10 days rest. So I believe, this is just my opinion, that this is one of the most important stretches, the six-day stretch from Monday to Sunday that the Raiders will face this year. They're up for the challenge. They got to get it done. Win this game and go into the Thanksgiving holiday at 8-2. Joining us, one of my favorite Raiders, John Kondo, the two-time Pro Bowler, the long snapper for the Silver and Black. We welcome him to the official Raiders podcast. So, John, I wanted to have you on for a number of reasons. First off, how was the bye week for you? Were you able to get away from football and kind of get away for a little bit, get the body healthy again for this big push for the playoffs the second half of the year?
Yeah, I mean, bye week was great. I mean, we coming off a big win Sunday night football, and then we had a couple of days of work in last week and had 5 days off. And, for especially the older guys today, I'm sure it's an awesome time for them to get away mentally and physically from the game. Me personally, you know, I see little ones, you know, so my wife probably really enjoyed me being home, just helping out with the family, being at home with the little girls. And I basically, you know, just played dad, you know, the whole weekend, and was able to watch a couple football games in here and there. But it was a great time.
Well, that's great good. Time. That's great because, you know, you've been with the team since 2006. You've been to a couple of Pro Bowls. And to have a record like 7-2, talk about that, John, and what that means to you to not only be in the hunt, but being a team that other teams are hunting the second half of the year.
Yeah, I mean, like what you just said, I mean, I've been here a while, and, I haven't been 7-2 since I've been here. But it's great. I mean, we're playing good ball. There's still a lot of work to be done, though, in all three phases, offensively, defensively, and special teams. There's, you know, we put the film on every Monday, and we watch ourselves, and there's a lot of room for improvement. Just the little details of things and stuff like that. There's still room where we can improve and get better. Being 7-2, it's a good film, but we're not happy with this yet. There's still a lot of work to be done. Right now, our focus is basically the process of what we're doing week in and week out. You know, coming into work, doing the things what you got to do to keep your body, you know, in tune. You know, and then get out there and play the game on Sunday.
John Kondo joins us. You've worked with a lot of head coaches there and different staffs. What's different with this staff led by Jack Del Rio when it comes to conditioning, obviously the mental edge that you have, and the way you handle all these victories recently and not get too high and not get too low after a loss?
Well, we have a thing, you know, every Tuesday when we come back into work, tell Truth Tuesday. And like I just said, you know, during a win or a loss, you know, he's going to tell us, you know, all the positives he's done, but also, you know, all the negatives that we've done during that game. And so the players look at that and, you know, they don't want to be up on that board, you know, of, you know, if you had a bad player or anything like that. But it's the truth. You know, you don't want to hide the truth. You learn from your mistakes. And I think what this team is really good at is we've obviously, you know, gelled together. We've bonded together, you know, and all that stuff through training camp and all of the OTAs. But there's a lot more accountability amongst the players. And you see that, you know, teams that are in the runs in the playoff season, teams that win the Super Bowl, you look at the teams, and some of the teams, you know, they're wild card teams. Oh yeah, they're playing great football at that time. But you see that a lot of the teams, they hold each other accountable. You know, you don't want to make a mistake, you know, to let your buddy next to you down. And that's the one biggest thing that I know is the difference from this team to teams in the past.
Raiders long snapper John Kondo joins us on the official Raiders podcast. And, John, let's get right to Marquette King. Do you have anything to do with the dancing and the showboating and showing the muscles? What is he like? What's your relationship like with Marquette, who's getting a lot of media nationally because he's playing great and he's having a lot of fun on the field?
Yeah, I mean, Marquette, he's a little kid, man. You know, I'm 35 years old, Seabass 38, but he brings out some youth in us. He makes us laugh, he makes us smile, and like what you just said, he's having fun out there. And I think when he's having fun, that's when he performs better. But to get with his dance moves, he asked me if I could dance with him and stuff like that, and I don't have the moves like he does. I don't have, you know, I don't think I have the courage to do it publicly. And I also thought, like, I think there'd be a fine, too, if we did dances together, because that'd be, you know, considered like a a predetermined, you know, dance move or something like that. But he's having an unbelievable year. And to see him coming in, you know, when he first got here to where he's at now, he's grown so much as a football player and understanding the game, understanding being a punter in the National Football League. I think when he first got here, you just thought what you had to do is just kick the ball as far as you can. But he realizes, you know, there's a thing, you know, you don't want touchbacks, you know, you want hang time. There's a time and place to kick longer balls, you know. So he's learned a tremendous amount since he's been here. And it's pretty cool to see, and he's done an unbelievable job for us, and I'm sure he's going to continue to do so.
John Kondo joins us. When Seabass struggles, he missed a couple at Tampa Bay. When he misses one, what is your role to specifically get him back on track, or do you just leave him alone and you know he's just going to do it next time because he's been that consistent?
Yeah, I mean, you got to know there's a time and place for everything, and with Seabass, you know, after the one miss he made, for me personally, I don't go up right away. I let him, you know, decompress a little bit, think about it, you know. But the big thing I try to do with both him and Marquette, you know, if they both have, you know, a bad ball or something like that, you know, hey, you know, to stay positive, you know, they're kicking for a reason, you know, in the league. And you know, I tell them that they're the best at what they do. And I think you can easily argue for both of those players that they are the best at what they do. And so the biggest thing for me is I just try to keep a positive head and just to continue to do what they do and trust yourself. That's another thing, you know, when you're doing something for so long, like being a kicker or a punter, it's a skill position. You just got to be able to trust, you know, in your mechanics and trust that you're going to have a good kick.
John Kondo is our guest. With all the experience you have on special teams, what have you learned about this unit this year, especially in coverage? And obviously when you're trying to get downfield, John, after you snap the ball and you've been known to make plays, you're one of the best in the business at not only doing your job and getting the ball out, but getting down there and making a tackle when you have to. Why is this year's team different than some of the recent teams of the past?
We're hungry. And I know there's a lot of newer guys on this team, but we're hungry. Guys are you know, hungry to win, wanting to make plays. This team, you know, on special teams, I mean, there's a lot of competition amongst the guys in that room that, you know, we want to be out there. We want to be the first ones down there making the play. That's just, you know, a pretty cool quality that you see amongst this group, that we're all competing amongst each other to get down the field to make plays and you know, to get that tackle or to, you know, to get some kind of stat down on the field. So that's a pretty cool little group that we have. And we play hard. There's a lot of effort. You know, that's the one thing coaches always tell us, you know, you can coach, you know, a lot of things, but you can't coach effort. And then also, you know, that's the one thing you can control on the field is the amount of effort that you put into each play. And like I said, on those Tuesdays that we tell the truth, there's times where, you know, if the guy's not giving enough effort, I mean, the coaches aren't afraid to call the player out. So like I said, there's a lot of accountability on this team.
Wrapping it up with John Kondo. John, tell us something about Azteca Stadium, this trip, from what you're hearing. And I want to talk about your conditioning and how you've prepped for this game and the altitude, obviously off a bye week. And then off this game, you got a short week with Carolina. The strength and conditioning, the position you put your bodies in to be ready for this game and this opponent, because this is a first-place team you're going up against with the Texans. A lot on the line for the Texans in the playoffs, just like it is for you and the Raiders.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, coaches, you know, have been, you know, not necessarily the position coaches, but the strength coaches have been on us. You know, hey, keep hydrated, because in good elevation, that's the biggest thing. And we're, you know, I think the flight there is maybe 4 hours. So when you're up in the air a lot, you know, you lose hydration. So it's the biggest thing is trying to get water and Gatorade and all that stuff down us, you know. And I know for me personally, you know, I ran a little bit, you know, during this bye week, you know, just to keep my conditioning levels up. And I'm sure a lot of my teammates did the same thing. So I think we're prepared. We're ready to go in. I know we play Monday night, won't get back early Tuesday morning, and then, you know, short week with Carolina the next week. But the biggest thing is taking care of your bodies and not doing anything that jeopardize, you know, yourself, you know, when you're out there playing for the week of practice and for Sunday. So that's basically it.
Well, John, your success story, and I've known you since you've come in to the league and with this team, and I continue to wish you success. I like to wrap it up by asking you, what does it mean for you to be a Raider?
Oh, man, be a Raider, to be someone to throw on the black and the silver and wear that shield on my helmet, it is an honor and a privilege, because there's so many past great players that have played in this organization. And I'm very extremely humbled, you know, to call myself a Raider. And I don't think there's no other organization I'd rather be a part of than the Raider organization.
Good luck getting a win there and turning it around. A lot of fans not only are pulling for you, but there'll be a lot watching Monday night football in Mexico City. Thanks a lot, John. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks, JT.
Alex Marvez, one of my all-time favorite insiders. Sirius XM, NFL, all the great work that he does, and a guy who actually follows closely the silver and black. Alex, thanks for joining us, and let's begin with what Kansas City and Denver did yesterday. Those games put Kansas City on a higher level, and Denver's season looked like it might have been slipping away if they don't come back in New Orleans.
Well, yeah, but see, that's why the Broncos are so resilient, right? Can we continue to count them out? They'd love to be an underdog every weekend. Think about that, JT. This is really the first time that we've seen the Denver Broncos on the field since winning the Super Bowl that you would say, hey, look, they are a flat-out underdog, right? I mean, they're beat up. Their offense isn't moving the ball. They got guys hurt. They're going to New Orleans. The Saints are a point-a-minute thrill show. No. You know what? And I think you saw a very spirited effort from the Denver Broncos yesterday playing off of that. And, of course, the huge win at the end, getting it done with some backup safeties, making a big play on special teams. By the way, Joe DeCamillis, their special teams coach, if he doesn't get head coaching interviews, at least interviews, this offseason, you know how messed up the process is there. This guy can be a great NFL head coach, in my opinion. And it's one of the things that I hate about with the league, with the general managers of today. They don't tap into the special teams pipeline. It's amazing how that position has just been neglected as far as the head coaching candidates go. As for Kansas City, interesting stat here for you, JT. Only six times in the 56-plus seasons of the Kansas City Chiefs have they ever come back from a deficit of two touchdowns in the fourth quarter. Six times. That's it. They've now done it twice this season. Think about that. A very resilient group in Kansas City, and, of course, led by that defense. I mean, they got guys who go after the ball, and I think that's the big thing about it. Look at the Jacksonville Jaguars right now. I believe we're up to, 22, 23 quarters, you know, straight without a turnover. I mean, the Chiefs, they know how to play for the football. Marcus Peters, Eric Berry. They're awesome. I mean, it's a really good team. And, of course, the Chargers sitting there at 4-6. JT, look at that. They could be a team that honestly would be right near the top in the AFC North, right near the top in the AFC South. Instead, even if they win out and go 10-6, they're still probably sitting at home because everyone else in the AFC West is going to be better. It's a crazy year, but the Chargers also did a lot of this to themselves.
Alex Marvez joins us. When I saw you with Gil Brand up in Napa for Raider preseason, did you think that the team would be a 7-2 team at this point, and what do you attribute it to?
No, I thought it would be more of a 6-3, I thought was upper end. And just because, you know, there's question marks. You know, we worry about stuff like, let me give you an example, Oakland and Jacksonville, right? The two teams that had the most offseason buzz among anyone. These are going to be the two teams that take the next step as NFL franchises and get back into the playoffs. Well, you saw what happened in Jacksonville. You know, you listen to your own press a little bit, and maybe the moves that you make in the offseason don't all come together really well. Well, the thing about the Raiders is it's Derek Carr. It starts with him. You know what, year three, going on year 12, you know, as far as maturity, as far as handling the game, he continues to grow as a player. You look at Jack Del Rio and the focus he has gotten out of this Raiders team. How about Oakland winning five games this season with 1 p.m. Eastern time kickoffs? JT, you were there between 2012 and 2014. They won two road games, period, during three seasons. It is such a different culture, a different atmosphere. I give them a lot of respect. And as for Jacksonville, well, I think that's the biggest difference is maybe the coaches in Oakland are just that much better than what you have going on in Jacksonville, which is probably one of the big reasons that, hey, Jacksonville will be cleaning house at the end of the season.
Alex Marvez, one of the premier NFL insiders from Sirius XM NFL Radio. Look at Mac and the way he's coming around again. He doesn't have a slump. If they were blocking him differently, so we had a slow start early on, they were chipping him, they were leaving a running back in. Is it now just his physicality that starts to wear down teams in the second half of the year? He's young. He gets stronger. He gets smarter on every play. Assess his play through this point.
Yeah, you're right. I agree with all that. Plus, let's remember here, this secondary was pretty bad early on, right? I mean, teams, you know, started with the New Orleans game, and a lot of folks able to have success throwing the football against the Raiders. I think as this group started to gel, you know, and as Reggie Nelson became comfortable, Carl Joseph, a rookie, starts to contribute. Sean Smith starts to figure out this Raiders defense. It's not just easy to throw a bunch of new faces out there and expect instant continuity. So I think that has something to do with it as well. Better play on the back end. If you can hold a guy for a half second, you know, from completing a pass, maybe that's all Khalil Mack needs. I give the Raiders credit because they've adjusted, right? And you look at Jack Del Rio and Ken Norton, and Jack stuck with Ken. Hey, maybe another coach would have gone ahead and done like Rex Ryan and Greg Roman and throw his coordinator under the bus and said, nah, you know, we'll get a new guy in. No, in this case, Jack worked with Ken. And these guys are now coming together and coming up with ways to fix things to get Khalil Mack on track. So, you know, it's not an effort thing with Khalil either. I mean, the guy's a beast. It didn't go his way early on. It's coming on now, and the Raiders are a better team for it.
Alex, I'm very fortunate and lucky that I built a relationship with Ken Stabler and his family where they invited me out to the festivities, and I had a first-row look at all of that. And even when Joe Horrigan came back for the halftime ceremony that I emceed, and I didn't feel tension with the Stabler family and obviously Joe Horrigan, and I know how important the legacy was to Al Davis, and Mark Davis really cares about the Stabler family. You've been talking about this as much as everybody, about the jacket and the ring. You talked to Kendra. You've talked to the family. What can change here? What type of pressure is the Hall of Fame feeling now due to your reporting?
Well, the story that came out on SportingNews.com was about a private conversation with Mark that he allowed me to share because I would never betray that confidence in the people I talked to. And, you know, Mark sat down with me for about 10 minutes. We were just about to watch practice up at Napa, and he said, look, I can't believe this with the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And he was livid. You know, he was so angry, and he said, I'm going to talk to David Baker, the president of the Hall. We need to get the ring and jacket to Ken Stabler and his family. Well, sometimes the Hall of Fame, quite honestly, as an entity, doesn't react well to being put in a corner, and I think that's what ended up happening when Kendra went public with her comments about the Hall of Fame, and then it really started to escalate. There's some other issues as well. Can the Hall of Fame set up budgeting? And I'm not being facetious here because I know it's a multi-million dollar organization, but it also, if I'm not mistaken, is one of those tax-free entities. So change, it doesn't happen overnight necessarily. But if you do this for the Stablers, are you going to be going back in time and rewarding jackets and rings to every posthumously inducted Hall of Famer, which is fine with me. I'm cool with all that, but you got to have a budget for it as well, if you know what I'm saying. I would hope in the 2017 offseason that there can be a way to get this resolved, that the Stabler family gets the ring and the jacket. But because this all went public and boiled over the way that it did, and the Hall of Fame dug in and said, we're not doing this, well, right now, I don't think that's an atmosphere and an environment that's for it, but I would not be surprised at all if in 2017 this gets resolved.
Okay, as we wrap it up, I'm going to quickly go through the Raiders' schedule. You know, Monday night is in Mexico City, Houston, then Carolina and Buffalo at home. And then in December, Kansas City on a Thursday night at the Chargers, Andrew Luck in Indy, then at Denver. Looking at a 7-2 team, I'm not going to hold you to it because we've been friends a long time. But is this a 10-win team, 11 or 12-win team, in your opinion?
I look at them at about 11-win team. You know, and by the way, I will be in Mexico City. At least that is the plan for Monday Night Football next week. And because it is such a historic event, and I cannot wait to see Raider Nation south of the border. I think it's going to be absolutely unbelievable, and there's no way I could pass up on having the opportunity to see such an incredible thing. So I'm excited about that. I think 11-5 is probably the realistic one. Look, they may have the thing. Too about Denver. This is a curious one. Will this game matter? And I just say that because can the Raiders get this thing wrapped up before the end of the season? Is there any way that they can extend their lead so that over Kansas City and Denver, that game in Week 17? Well, you know what? Denver could score a zillion points on them. It doesn't matter because the Raiders will be locked into the postseason. The other good news for whoever wins the AFC West is this: with the way the AFC North is going, with the AFC South and the Houston Texans not being a very good team, you know they are 6-3, but you know who really believes in them? There's a very legit chance of getting that first round playoff bye. Could you imagine if the playoffs return to the Oakland Coliseum? I mean, JT, I'm just salivating at the thought of seeing Raider Nation showing up for a home playoff game because it has been so darn long. What has it been since 2002 season since the Raiders have hosted a game? JT, that would just be off the chain, and I think it could propel the Raiders if they win this division into an AFC Championship game, and then all bets are off from there.
Fabulous as always, my friend. Talk to you soon. Thanks for the time.
For you, JT, anytime. Be good, baby.
Thanks again for joining us on the official Raiders podcast. For everyone at Silver and Black Productions, I'm JT. Thanks for downloading this on iTunes or Raiders.com or following the Raiders on Twitter or on Facebook. We'll get you ready for the Carolina Panthers next week. Have an outstanding night watching Monday Night Football, and hopefully the Raiders come out of Mexico City with a win.
Thanks for listening to this installment of the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders.